dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to the Frank Gaffney Show. We cover the world for you, and we'll be talking about your national security with some of the best in the business. Stephen Emerson, the country's preeminent counterterrorism expert, arguably, will be discussing with some stunning revelations about Senator Dick Durbin, the chairman of a subcommittee in the Senate Judiciary Committee that held hearings this week, but seemingly fails completely to understand the nature of the enemy within. What's wrong with that picture, and what does it mean for you? We'll be with us for segment two. Segment three, Roger Noriega, a former senior Bush administration official with responsibility for Latin America, will talk to us about Hugo Chavez and the cancer that is Chavismo. Are we ignoring the toxic brew in our own front yard? And what are the repercussions if we continue to do so? And then in segment four, we'll be joined by Seth Liebson, the co-author with Bill Bennett of a marvelous new book, The Fight of Our Lives. We'll be talking with him about what it is, and are we losing? So all of that is coming up, but let me give you a sort of take on what happened this week in Washington, in your world. Of course, much of what's been going on has been focused on Libya. We've had Secretary of State Hillary Clinton fulminating about how we might best help the rebels, and yet we don't seemingly have a clue still who these guys are, let alone what they would do were they to come to power in Libya. We've been given conflicting stories about whether the CIA is on the ground or not helping the rebels. Are they helping them with targeting? Are they helping them with air cover? Are they helping them by being trained in the use of armaments? Perhaps are we going to be providing them arms? Well, all this raises a question that our colleague Andy McCarthy has nicely captured in the phrase, the Libyan Mujahideen, which is to say, are we simply doing what we did in Afghanistan back in the Reagan years, arming people who turn out to be mortal enemies and thereby equipping them to wage war more effectively against us in the future? And a related issue, how we got into this fix, has been brought to the fore. We suddenly are talking a lot now about something called the responsibility to protect. This is a particularly woolly-headed notion that a woman by the name of Samantha Power in the National Security Council, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Susan Rice, and, yes, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton seem to have embraced, as has President Obama, and accordingly, we are now responsible to protect people in Libya. What else are we likely to find ourselves told we have a responsibility to inject ourselves into? And where on earth are we going to come up with the resources, the personnel, the equipment to do it? And what happens if there are real threats to our national security that go unattended as a result? For example, at the moment, the rising danger from a nuclear-armed Iran. We also heard the president speak about energy this week. He laid out his vision for how he is going to wean the United States from much of the oil that it currently imports from overseas. And yet somehow, as we'll be talking about later in the program with Gal Luft, he seems to have neglected the one thing that could actually make a material difference in the amount of oil that we are relying upon, either, for that matter, from onshore or American sources or overseas, namely what is known as an open fuel standard, a means by which we can transform our automotive fleet in relatively short order from one that is comprised of what I think of as gasaholics to one that is made up of omnivores, cars that do not have to have gasoline to be powered, but that can be fueled by the kinds of alcohol-based fuels, not just ethanol, and certainly not just from corn, but alcohol-based fuels that we can manufacture in enormous quantities here, as they could be manufactured also in probably about 120 countries overseas. In other words, transforming the world from one in which we are dangerously at the mercy of OPEC, an organization made up of people like Hugo Chavez and, of course, the Saudis and other disreputable outfits, notably Iran, that wish us ill. If we could break the back of those guys, if we could replace our dependency on people who are trying to kill us with a self-reliance through these alternative fuels that can be produced in quantity here, if only our automobiles could be configured to use them, well, that's clearly the way to go. No evidence the president understands that, certainly no indication that this is a priority for him in making the United States energy secure. We've got to fix that. Again, we'll be talking about it much, much more here at Secure Freedom Radio and my efforts to illuminate the issue on the Frank Gaffney Show. What we'll be also visiting about in the course of the program, of course, is the ongoing problem with Japan's nuclear crisis. It's only gotten worse this week. Sadly, we've seen the Japanese government, the Tokyo Electric Power Company, falling back in disrepair from previous pronouncements about the nature of the problem, the extent to which radiation is emanating from one or more of the reactors that have been damaged by first the earthquake, more so by the tsunami, the shutdown of power that was associated with those natural disasters. What we are witnessing, I'm afraid, is a growing likelihood that the public, both abroad and here, will find it very difficult to accept the idea that we continue to rely on nuclear power and that we have a considerable interest in making it safer, making it less costly, making it more readily available. Were we to throw the nuclear element of our energy production capacity out of the bus, we will be in even greater difficulty in terms of meeting our energy needs, our energy security needs, for that matter. Another point which I'll talk about in the course of the program with our friend Gordon Chang is China's attitude in all of this. China, of course, has its own keen interest in nuclear power, and yet, aside from temporarily insisting that there be some sort of safety reviews, they are almost entirely, it would appear, indifferent to what is going on in Japan, not certainly lending the kind of help that one might expect from a fraternal neighbor of Japan. Indeed, Gordon Chang tells us that what China seems to be mostly doing is gloating about what's befallen its rival in the Asian region. And finally, as we'll be talking about momentarily with Steve Emerson, the Durbin hearings. Congressman Durbin, as I mentioned earlier, held hearings in the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee. His theme seems to be that Islamophobia is the greatest threat we face. He's all about the victimization of Muslims and relies heavily upon those who we have reason to believe are not being victimized. In fact, they are hard at the business of trying to impose their Sharia program on all the rest of us, making us the victims, not just former Muslims who they seek to liquidate under Sharia, but the rest of us who they seek to have submit to their program. Thank God for Senator John Kyle, Senator Lindsey Graham, Republicans in the hearing who stood up to Senator Durbin and his agenda, made very important points indicating that the failure of these Muslim Brotherhood Associated Front organizations, who make up much of the so-called Muslim American community leadership, to work with the law enforcement community to combat and defeat the terrorists among them, is just one example of what's wrong with this picture and what we need to get much, much more right. We'll be visiting with Steve Emerson about that in the next segment. I hope you'll stay with us for more of what you absolutely need to know to secure your freedom and that of those you love. That's what we're here for. The Frank Gaffney Show continues straight ahead.
First line of defense in the war of ideas. Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The Meta System from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The Meta System also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the Meta System, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the Meta System to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The Meta System by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer, the powerful all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
China is a leader in the green movement?
Yeah, Glenn Beck is as surprised as you.
Man has to do the things to take care of the environment. Americans are some of the best in the world on the environment. Really, China?
You're really looking at China to lead the world.
You know what our skies and our oceans will look like when China takes the lead? Which, by the way, check your watches, I think happened about last week.
Glenn Beck, weekday mornings 9 to noon on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is a very special segment for me because we are joined by a man we have had on in the past, but not for a while, and it's great to have him back. He is Stephen Emerson. I consider him to be a national treasure. He is the founder and executive director of an indispensable organization in Washington, D.C., known as the Investigative Project on Terrorism. He is the author of six books, or co-author, including Jihad Incorporated. He has done some terrific work in film as well, and he's just a go-to guy on issues like the one I wanted to visit about with him, namely tomorrow's hearing that is going to be held in a subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee, chaired by Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, a Democrat who happens to be the number two Democrat in the Senate as well, the Senate Majority Whip. And Steve, I know you've been doing some research both on the senator and some of his associations and also on some of the witnesses. Tell us, first of all, what is the thrust of this hearing and why should we be paying attention to it?
Well, I don't know that we should be paying attention to it. frankly, it's a hearing that Senator Dick Durbin, who is the senior Democrat from Illinois and the chairman of the subcommittee on the Judiciary Committee, he's holding a hearing. Essentially, it's the anti-Pete King hearing. He has been in bed with radical Islamic groups for the last 8 years, and he has hidden that from basically the American public, although it's really been a deliberate, willful turning of a blind eye by the mainstream media. He has aligned himself with CARE, sent them letters of congratulations, agreed to speak to their banquets, fundraised for them, and most recently paid a visit to the Bridgeview Mosque. For those who don't know what that is, it's the largest, one of the largest mosques in the United States. It's southwest of Chicago, and it is considered the senior center of Hamas activity in the United States, led by Imam Jamal Said, who was listed as an unindicted co-conspirator in the Holy Land Foundation case, which, you know, was the case against the fundraisers for Hamas, all of whom were convicted. In that picture, which was printed in the Bridgeview Mosque newsletter online, it shows him with eight people, six of whom are actually allied with Hamas, five of whom have been listed as unindicted co-conspirators, and four of whom have made statements calling for the killing of Jews. This is just the tip of the iceberg in terms of his alliance with these groups. His chief witness is a woman named Farhana Karas, head of Muslim Advocates. Her chief claim to fame is the allegation that, if you recall the case of Zazi, he was the New York Times would-be square bomber, that the FBI had lost track of, actually, and the only time they've ever lost track of a terrorism suspect that they had 24/7 surveillance on. The reason that they lost track of him was because the FBI went to Zazi's imam and asked the imam to notify the FBI if the imam knew where Zazi was. Instead, the imam called up Zazi and said, "The FBI is looking for you. Disappear." Ms. Farhana's interpretation of that was that the FBI was trying to entrap the imam, and therefore imams, not just Muslim citizens, should not talk to the FBI. My belief is that this woman is someone that should probably be behind jail rather than being testifying.
We're talking with Stephen Emerson. Excuse me. 3, 2, 1. We're talking with Stephen Emerson, one of the country's foremost experts on terrorism, jihadism, and the operations of the Muslim Brotherhood and its affiliates here inside the United States. Steve, you've made some very worrying charges here and information that I was unaware of, and I imagine our audiences as well. Just to recap, of course, the King hearings that you're referring to are those that Congressman Pete King, the chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, had on the House side 2 or 3 weeks ago now, in which he was looking at radicalization inside the Muslim American community. And what you've described here is seemingly an effort by Senator Dick Durbin in a Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, Human Rights, and the Law, I believe it's called, to basically try to provide political cover, I guess, for some of those very radicals that we should be worrying about.
Not only cover, let me go further. He issued a statement several years ago, if you remember, when the Attorney General guidelines were reinterpreted and revised to allow the FBI not to have their hands tied behind their back, and gave them a little bit more leeway in making connections between people in their database that had radical Islamic backgrounds and were in contact with people connected to be threats to the United States. So a press conference was held by Senator Dick Durbin accusing the FBI of engaging in a behavior that allowed them to simply arrest Muslims only on the basis of race without any type of criminal evidence, and a critique that was demonstrably and 100% wrong and proven wrong by even the ACLU. So this is a man who is reckless, who has been protective of radical Islam. I mean, the more I have read about it, I'll be frank with you, I did not expect to read and find out as much bad information and his protection of radical Islam. He has a woman who works on his staff named Rima Dodan, D-E-E-D-I-N, okay? She sends out emails under her own email, not the government's email, which are emails reflecting the Muslim Brotherhood's views in the United States. They're front groups, that is. She doesn't mention the MB, but she sends out critiques. She attacks Peter King. This is a woman that should not be in the U.S., should not be working as a staff member, and certainly her activities on the staff while she's working for Senator Durbin is either tolerated by him, and if it isn't tolerated by him, she should be fired. But it, frankly, it's consistent with his whole entire policy of the last 7 years of protecting radical Islamic groups. He even attacked Michael Waller in 2003, when Michael Waller criticized the FBI director for speaking before the American Muslim Council, which was a direct creation of the Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah, run by a man who is now serving 23 years in federal prison, Abdurrahman Alamoudi. Steve, you mentioned bad information. I think what you mean is negative information. It's very high quality information that's very negative in character. We've only got about 2 minutes left. Steve, let me just ask you, because my guess is that one of the narratives that this hearing is designed to promote is one we've been hearing both from these Muslim Brotherhood fronts and, more worrying still, from senior U.S. government officials, namely that we are now confronting a far greater threat in America than terrorism.
Yes.
Namely, Islamophobia. Tell us about this.
You would like to know, this is news for you, that Michael Leiter, the head of the NCTC, who, you know,
the National Counterterrorism Center,
I just held a conference, which was closed. It cost the taxpayers $4 million. I got tweeted and e-texts from participants from DHS agents, FBI agents, saying, I can close up shop because the only problem was Islamophobia, and all we needed to do was outreach. That was the two-day message of this entire conference, at which they featured apologists and even members of front groups for the Muslim Brotherhood. Mr. Leitner himself said that Al Jazeera was his favorite television station, radical Islam was only a nuisance, a tiny problem, and that Islamophobia was the biggest problem we face.
Steve, this is absolutely chilling. It's the kind of data and documentation that we rely upon the Investigative Project on Terrorism to provide. It is truly a public service that you make this available and do so particularly at a moment like this, when clearly, if this narrative takes hold, if we find that the U.S. government is poised to basically describe the kind of conversation we're having right now as, I don't know, what, hate speech? Well, that becomes part of the larger campaign to suppress it that we've seen in so many other places, the Sharia blasphemy business. And I pray that your warnings, both here at Secure Freedom Radio and elsewhere, will be heard. Next up, we'll be talking with Roger Noriega about one of those oil-rich nations, Venezuela, and what they're doing to make our lives more dangerous.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean, I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
Following is an important message from President Clinton and President Bush.
In January, Haiti experienced an environmental catastrophe and human tragedy of epic proportion.
But thanks in part to the generous spirit of the American people, the country of Haiti has survived. But now the people need to thrive. President Clinton and I have seen firsthand the power of your contributions at work.
The Clinton-Bush Haiti Fund is on the ground, funding programs that create jobs, teach skills, and assist local businesses.
Our fund is dedicated to supporting initiatives that encourage local entrepreneurs and help build an inclusive economy that lifts up everyone.
Help us continue this work so the people of Haiti have an opportunity to prosper.
Thank you.
To donate, go to ClintonBushHaitiFund.org or text QUAKE to 20222 to give $10. Message and data rates may apply. Brought to you by the Clinton Bush Haiti Fund and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined by Ambassador Roger Noriega, a man who served his country with distinction in several different capacities in the Department of State, concluding as the Assistant Secretary of State for Western Hemisphere Affairs. He also was the U.S. representative to the Organization of American States. In short, he is deeply knowledgeable about what I think of as America's front yard, not its backyard, its front yard, south of our borders. And Roger, welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you, especially in the wake of a very important piece that you published in the Washington Post, I think about now 2 weeks ago. We've been talking about it with others, but are delighted to have the author with us, concerning an astounding development that you unveiled. Tell us about it and what the implications are of this meeting that took place down in Caracas.
Well, Frank, it is rather remarkable, and it's a sign of just how out of hand things are because of the lack of attention of the Obama administration, and frankly, that started in the last year or so of the Bush administration about what Chavez was up to. They've basically given the steel sign to this guy, and it isn't just about disrupting democracy in Ecuador and Bolivia and other places. It's about making common cause with Iran, becoming a strategic partner with Iran, including in the sowing of a terrorist network in our hemisphere. And they had a terror summit that Chavez hosted in August of last year. This is completely secret encounter that was revealed by sources that I have in the government of the leadership of Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hamas and Hezbollah, people that do not leave their lairs in the Middle East for fear of assassination by people who have problems with their terrorism, showing up in Caracas at a meeting there with Chavez. And the purpose is not tourism. It is to plan,
I dare say.
Plan the terror network right in our backyard. And this was an initiative of the Iranians to put Chavez up to hosting this meeting, because it's a way for Iran to push this threat into our neighborhood. And it is an insurance policy for them if we ever have to take action against their dangerous rogue nuclear program.
Yeah. And as you sort of implied, I think, in your comment just now, Ambassador Noriega, this is not the first time that Hugo Chavez has been engaging in activities that are deeply inimical to the interests of the United States, not least the security interests of the United States. How would you characterize more generally the role that Hugo Chavez of Venezuela is playing, not only as a client or proxy or ally, at least, of Iran, but in the hemisphere, in enabling the penetration by the Iranians and Hamas and Hezbollah and so on, but also working with some of the other nations of the region? I mean, I'd like to come back to a point you sort of skirted there, but what else is he doing that we should be alarmed about?
Well, the strategic initiative of Chavez is to make common cause with important enemies, or at least rivals of the United States: China, Russia, Iran, Cuba. And they all benefit in different ways from the oil wealth of Chavez, the regional platform to sell arms in the region, to acquire raw materials in the region. The Iranians are clearly using the Venezuelan financial sector to evade sanctions. They're mining uranium in Venezuela right under our noses, which is completely illegal. And
a material benefit for their nuclear weapons program, presumably.
Absolutely. And the evasion of sanctions really is, too, is succor for their illegal nuclear program. But here's the point. Chavez wants a nuclear program himself. My sources say explicitly, we're not talking about power plants here. We're talking about he wants a nuclear military program. And the example he's getting from Libya is that the mistake that Gaddafi made was giving up his nuclear bomb or nuclear program.
I'm reasonably sure, Ambassador Noriega, that an awful lot of other people are probably taking away that same lesson, which is not going to be good for our counter-proliferation efforts. Let me ask you this. You've painted a very grim picture of an individual in an oil-rich nation, though he's doing his level best, I guess, to bankrupt it, but nonetheless with an awful lot of resources at his disposal to make not just mischief but mayhem in what I think of as our front yard. The president of the United States was in the neighborhood a couple of weeks ago. In fact, while he was there, he decided to launch this war with with Libya. But what did he say about all of this? Did he address it at all? And if not, was there sort of this bizarre disconnect between what he was talking about and what's really going on in the region?
Well, he absolutely did not address it. He didn't address Iran's presence. He did not address the mayhem that Chavez is sowing in various countries in the region, including the destruction of his own. He didn't talk about China pushing into the hemisphere where they're essentially eating, almost literally eating our lunch in terms of petroleum exports.
Well, I want to come back to that, but why would that be? Is it that he is unaware that this is going on?
These folks have convinced themselves, and to a certain extent the career people who ran Bush's policy toward the end of his second term, convince themselves that you don't want to provoke Chavez. You know, frankly, I'd like to see them pay attention to what's happening in the region without provoking him. And the fact is, Chavez hides behind this democratic mantle. And frankly, we have to reconcile ourselves to the fact that even a popular leader, which he's not, but even if he were, doesn't have the right to challenge our essential security interests close to our borders, and literally sowing the terror network up to the Mexican border.
And beyond, unfortunately. There's increasing evidence it's actually across that border, as you know. Let me ask you one more thing, if we may. We're going to run out of time here very quickly. We're speaking again with Ambassador Roger Noriega, currently with the American Enterprise Institute. He formerly served in senior positions in the U.S. State Department under President George W. Bush. And I guess I want to come back to this question about a particularly ominous effort being made at direct contravention of what we used to call the Monroe Doctrine in the United States, namely that you touched on a moment ago, Mr. Ambassador, about China's role in our neighborhood. I imagine the president doesn't want to offend or irritate China either, but can we afford not to appreciate that the role they're playing has real strategic overtones, whether it's a space program with Brazil, or whether it's building a dry canal in Colombia, or whether it's buying up resources or helping enable Hugo Chavez's activities or in any of these other ways? Can we neglect this and allow it to go on unchecked?
Well, that's precisely the problem, is that the fact that we haven't paid attention to Chavez, and that we've ignored that threat, and explicitly under the Obama administration refusing to even use the fellow's name, has sent a signal to Moscow and to Beijing that it's okay for them to join the conspiracy of Chavez against the United States. Before, both of those countries tread fairly lightly in this hemisphere, particularly under the Bush administration and before. But now they get the message that it's okay for them to sell arms that are going to end up in the hands of Middle Eastern terrorists.
There'll be no cost to them at all.
It's okay for them to completely replace the United States as a market for Venezuelan oil. That is happening quite literally. The numbers just came out about what the daily imports of Venezuelan oil by the United States is. Now it's 750,000 barrels. It was something around 2 million barrels a day just 10 years ago. And the Chinese, in the meantime, has gone from 40,000 to somewhere near 600,000 barrels a day.
Yeah, well, there you go.
So they're
Mr. Messer,
pushing us out of that market.
We have to leave it there with a pregnant thought that this is something we cannot neglect. We hope to have you back soon to help us ensure that we're not neglecting it here at Secure Freedom Radio. And in the meantime, we thank you very much for your terrific piece in the Washington Post, your counsel here, and your work at the American Enterprise Institute. Keep it up. We'll talk with you again very soon.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though.
Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager is skeptical that the changes in the Middle East will be good for the region.
There is little historic precedent for being optimistic about political developments in the Arab world.
That doesn't mean it will never be good.
It just means that based on history, there is not a lot of reason to be optimistic about anything that happens in the Arab world.
The Dennis Prager Show, weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home,
or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really? What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq-Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back. As sometimes happens in this line of work, as our next guest knows all too well, you wind up with somebody who wasn't your expected guest, but who is very welcome nonetheless. Instead of Bill Bennett, we have his co-author of The Fight of Our Lives, Seth Leibson. You have almost certainly heard him frequently on Bill Bennett's program, Morning in America, as a producer and colleague and friend, as well as a contributor in his own right. He is a fellow of the highly esteemed Claremont Institute and a managing partner of Leibson and Associates. And Seth, you are on the book tour both with Bill and independent of him, and we were unable to get Bill this time around. We hope for a rain check with him, but we're thrilled to have you with us. And thank you so much for a singular contribution to the war of ideas in the form of The Fight of Our Lives. Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio.
Thank you, Frank. It's an honor to be with you, and this fight would be much harder to wage without the work you've been doing without your radio show, so it's nice to be with you.
Thank you. Well, you're making an important contribution to both the fight and to the show. Let's start with what it is we're up against. In the book, you address it in several different ways, I think. Terms like radical Islam, an ideology, the Sharia even appears once or twice, I think. What is it that we are fighting against in this fight of our lives, Seth Leibson?
We're fighting against a toxic ideology that is armed across the world and here in America that, quite simply put, wants to end us. It wants the Sharia flag, the Islamic flag, to fly over the White House, and it doesn't care how many Americans or allies of Americans it kills on the way to do so. it's nothing short of the fight of our lives.
Yeah. You have described our response to this phenomenon as a kind of political correctness. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if in part that's a function of not really appreciating that in addition to the piece that you just spoke about, the sort of armed, violent manifestations of this ideology, that's because we don't appreciate the kind of stealthy jihad that is the companion and helpmate and in some ways even the most toxic of these Sharia adherence program. And I just wondered, to what extent does it go beyond political correctness to, as Andy McCarthy likes to say, willful blindness about the nature of the threat itself?
It goes far and it goes deep. You were responsible for a report a few months back, Frank, that Andy worked with you on, Jim Woolsey, my friend, and your friend Brian Kennedy, and others that described this. Everyone in America should read this. Part of the political correctness is that that report did not get the attention it deserved. Part of the political correctness is that we start our book with the case of Nidal Hassan, the mass murderer of Fort Hood. Within about a day of the news breaking of the Fort Hood massacre, we had people who knew him from Bethesda Naval, people in the military who said, yes, we heard him say things like this. We heard him talking about slaying the infidel, pouring hot oil down their throats, but we didn't want to say anything. Why didn't they want to say anything? They didn't want to say anything because they thought if they did, their careers would be on the line rather than his. That's how far and deep this whole thing runs. It has reached a place we never thought it would, the political leadership of the military, never mind the political leadership of the civilian administration.
Yeah. You call it in the book that you've written, Seth Leibson, with Bill Bennett, entitled The Fight of Our Lives, a crisis of will. And I think that's really a marvelous turn of phrase. And one of the other points that you make in your opening section about this Fort Hood business, which is such a classic example of this phenomenon, this really dangerous blindness, crisis of will, whatever, and that is the failure of the after-action report even to mention the name of the perpetrator, let alone to describe in any kind of detail what it was that prompted him to act as he did. Tell us a little bit about that story.
The after-action report from the Pentagon, and there were two, by the way, there was the first one and then there was a follow-up, talked about everything but what happened at Fort Hood. What happened at Fort Hood, if they wanted an after-action report, could have been simply put in about three sentences. A radical Islamist was raised and trained in America. He wanted to kill Americans, and he did. That's the report that should have been printed. That's not what was said. Instead, we got a sociological study on all kinds of theories of violence. Islam wasn't mentioned. Radical Islam wasn't mentioned. Muslims weren't mentioned. Terrorism wasn't mentioned. You know what was mentioned? The need for more healthcare workers. It's a joke. Nidal Hassan, a psychiatrist, was a healthcare worker. If you want to know how bad this thing was, all you have to do is listen to what Chief of Staff of the Army George Casey, General George Casey, said on NBC right after the murder. He said, our diversity, not only in our army, but in our country, is a strength. And as horrific as this tragedy was, if our diversity becomes a casualty, I think that's worse. There's the head of the army saying, force protection and American life is less important than having a diverse military. That's the opposite of what the military is for, as you know, Frank.
Right. Indeed it is. And Seth Leibson, the point I think that you've made with that sort of insight into this corrupting of our political leadership and the politicizing of our military leadership is indeed a crisis of will. And I wonder if I could just draw you out on one point, because it seems to me that whether it is in fact political correctness that we think we're engaging in, trying to avoid giving offense, trying to be multiculturally sensitive. Our enemies, it seems to me, particularly under this doctrine they adhere to called Sharia, regard it as submission. And I wonder if, Seth, as you've looked at this in the context of the fight of our lives, and of course in your day-to-day work in the past with Bill Bennett and in Morning of America, you've sensed that our enemies are taking such heart from this behavior as to redouble their efforts and to become vastly more formidable a threat to us as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. Listen, the most famous quote most Americans probably know from Osama bin Laden is that people would rather follow a strong horse than a weak horse. If they see we're weak, that's when they think they can attack us. You know, we had attack after attack after attack against us through the 1990s up until the USS Cole, and nothing was done. Very little was done to nothing. Nothing was done about the Cole. They thought they could attack us again, and they did on 9/11. And for a while, in those early heady days right after 9/11, we were talking in America about things like what? Draining the swamps. Draining the swamps. You don't hear much kind of talk like that anymore. Instead, what you hear from our administration, from the mainstream media, is that we are a country of Islamophobes, that we are bigoted, and that our attention on the Muslim faith, on radical Islam, that is the problem. Not that radical Islam wants to kill us.
No.
A complete turning upside down of what the issue is.
To the point now where the meme is that Islamophobia is a greater threat to this country than terrorism. I mean, this is a formula for disaster. Seth, you know the tyrannies of the time on radio better than I.
I do.
We have about a minute left. Tell us very quickly your thoughts and Bill Bennett's thoughts in your Fight of Our Lives book about the need for reform within Islam, good Muslims. Where do we go from here to try to help them?
We have a faith in Islam of over a billion people. And again and again and again, we keep hearing about two or three names of people we can really trust who are really doing the hard work. Zudi Jasser here in Phoenix is certainly one of them in my view. We need to help people like that. It's very important. And we need to continue to demand of the Muslim community that if terrorists are perverting their religion, they need to stand up as loudly as they do when the Pope says something they disagree with. When they do that, we'll stop saying there's a problem with Islam.
Yeah. Seth Liebson, fascinating insights, tremendous contribution to the war of ideas. The Fight of Our Lives is the book. I strongly commend it to you. Its subtitle is Knowing the Enemy, Speaking the Truth, and Choosing to Win the War Against Radical Islam. At its core is Sharia. It is being advanced by the Muslim Brotherhood. You'll get insights into all of this in this very important book. I thank both of you, Seth and the absent Bill, for what you've done here and for what you've been doing for years now to educate all of us about what's at stake. And I appreciate your arming us to fight the fight of our lives. Come back to us again soon, Seth. We'll look forward to talking with you, and Godspeed. Next up, we have Victor Davis Hansen.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.